Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Jade Grantham. Jade is the author of Accept That You Are Imperfect, a book about her personal journey and recovery with bulimia nervosa, which started when she was 12 years old. Jade wrote her book not as one person's struggle or a self-help book, but a call for awareness, understanding, and early intervention, preventing the silent epidemic that is bulimia. I loved this conversation with Jade. I'd read her book whilst I was on holiday and literally digested it in 2 days. It was so good. There were so many aspects of Jade's book that I related to, despite the fact that I haven't experienced bulimia. But I think the thing that I appreciated so much was that still in this day and age, we're so open to talk about eating disorders, but bulimia is very much shied away from talking about. There's a lot of stigma, a lot of shame associated with it. And the only way that we're going to get rid of that shame and stigma is by having these open conversations. So really appreciated Jade bringing that open discussion to the podcast and sharing her experience of why bulimia persisted for so long and what it gave to her and how she's now navigating her life without bulimia. Thank you so much for joining me. So for the listeners, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Jade Grantham, and recently I wrote a book called Accept That You're Imperfect, which is essentially an honest account of my experience with suffering from bulimia from the age of 12 until today, because it's a continuous journey, which we'll get into. But yeah, so it's not a self-help book in any respect, but it's just more I felt that once I kind of had the time and space to reflect on what I went through, there wasn't really any literature or anything that I could find or access at the time, and podcasts weren't a thing as they are now. To just help me not feel as alone in my spaces as I was and as I felt. So that was my aim. But to share my story and just to kind of help and encourage other people to share what they're going through, ask for help, because everyone needs it. Yeah,
and I think what I found brilliant about the book is over the past few years, like, we do talk about eating disorders a lot more, but, and I found it even when I do podcasts with people, like, I will say, oh, you know, if they come on and they've got experience of bulimia, nobody ever quite gets to the nitty gritty of, you know, how bulimia impacted their life, like why they engage in those behaviors. Because, you know, if we're being upfront and honest, the behaviors that you engage in when you have bulimia, they're not the most appetizing. Like, you know, they are behaviors that most people, I think, in society might be a bit disgusted by. And I think that builds a lot of shame and stigma around the topic of bulimia, which means that people then don't want to talk about it. That's why I found your book so refreshing, because, I mean, obviously you don't go into details of like the nth degree of when you were purging. But for me, it was understanding the motivations behind your behaviors. And you kind of, you know, you spoke about how even though it was something, you know, that isn't very nice to do, it felt like something you had to keep on doing, and that became like a ritual for you, which I really appreciated, because I think that often people don't really talk about why they did the behavior or why they kept up with the behavior for so long.
Completely. And I think even in my own recovery story, there was a huge pivotal moment when I was in my late 20s after suffering from so young, where I had never understood that there was more to this than body image. And I kind of assumed that this was just something that I used because this was the only way that I could cope. And I didn't realize it was an emotion suppressor. I didn't realize that it was caused by so many other factors. And I never actually, no one ever encouraged me or kind of stops me to think about actually why maybe I was doing this or what actually was underneath. Because it got to the point in probably the worst it was where several times a day for several hours a day I was kind of making myself sick and purging, and it's no one in normal society would choose to do that, but I couldn't get away from it. And it just became such a normal behaviour for me that I would go to the nth degree and to complete lengths just to get away with this secret that I had. Even when I was in my late 20s, I was educated, had a social life, had a beautiful life around me, I was still doing this. So yeah, kind of very interesting and grateful to Natalie, kind of in the period where I can reflect and look back on some of the stuff to unpick and recover. And even writing the book, so much more came up than I've either chosen to forget or that I hadn't quite fully analysed or understood the reasons behind I was doing certain things. And that was, again, like a huge turning point for my own recovery, because the motivations and the reasoning that I had of why I was doing it no longer made sense. And actually, when you start to unpick it and you analyse it and you think, oh, well, that's not the case at all, or why was I doing that? That was never gonna, my action was never gonna achieve the outcome that I wanted. But obviously, as a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old, you can never think. I still find a lot of the discussion around eating disorders is focused on recovery and weight gain and healthy weight, and you have to have a healthy body image, and of course that's so important, but it's the actions and the motivations and the things you choose to change that for you. And for me, it's control completely. Like, definitely have addictive personality and tendencies, fueled by kind of having a childhood that was so beautiful and so happy, but not a lot of kind of vulnerable emotion showed from like women in my family. So I didn't know how to necessarily be vulnerable when I was young, because I didn't see that behavior repeated. And then like a small catalyst of lots of little things that just extended onto a path of having bulimia for 20 years.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that you touched on such an important point there of like in recovery. I think for me that's been kind of the key point of my recovery, is not just thinking about like, you know, what's the behavior that I'm engaging in or, you know, things like that, but it's getting underneath that into like, what, not even like why am I doing that to start with, but actually what's it providing me in life. And I think that's what you really explored nicely in your book, was actually what the bulimia was providing for you and what you felt like you were missing. And I wondered if you might want to explain a little bit about that for the listeners that haven't read the book yet, to kind of, you know, if people have heard of bulimia but don't understand, maybe haven't had experience of it, what was it for you that kind of, I guess, kept you going back to something that, you know, really isn't that nice a thing to engage in?
Yeah, sure. So I think what started from the initial kind of engaging in the behavior, what was kind of initially fueled by wanting to change my body, was uncomfortable in what I saw. And I was never kind of a certain size. I was a very childhood, played lots of sports. But the expectations that I had internally for myself, combined with a whole other host of factors that I hadn't fully realised. I was 12, I was starting at a new school, I was in a period of like a lot of hormonal imbalance and that kind of horrible age of 12 that no one really wants to be or go back to, because you don't really know what's going on. You're trying to be literally the Britney Spears song, "I'm not a girl, not yet a woman." I just felt uncomfortable. There was a lot of change going on in life. There's a lot of things that I didn't communicate to the people around me. So I internalized my distress. I internalized my uncomfortableness that I felt within myself. And I took it out of myself, essentially. And this behavior that I used of bulimia was an emotional suppressant. And it was my way of coping with an uncomfortable, overwhelming feeling that I had, which later in my life developed to the point where any uncomfortable emotion, whether it's bored, happy, sad, any emotion that I kind of encountered, I didn't face properly because I used this mechanism to cope. And it was the only way I really knew how to kind of process emotion or not process emotion and avoid. And there's an interesting podcast. So I was listening to a podcast by Harriet Brew, and she was saying that a lot of people that engage in the behavior of bulimia, it's not a chance, but a lot of people will try in a lifetime to make themselves sick. And for some people it will work, and for some people it won't work. And that's like a circumstantial thing that for me it was just so easy when I tried. And not a lot of people will have that same experience. And for me, because it was so easy, it then became something that I incorporated several times a day into my day, into my day routine, just to help with everyday normal emotions and encounters, the behaviors that humans will face, because I've attached a kind of a value and a comfort to that behavior.
I think that's really interesting what you were saying about, you know, for some people it is so easy and it just happens, and other people it doesn't. And there were times when I tried to make myself sick and I couldn't. Like, it just literally wasn't something I could do. And I remember getting so frustrated and thinking, God damn, if I could just get rid of this, that would make life so much easier. And in a way, I'm very grateful that I couldn't do that, because I think, you know, it is, from the conversations I've had with people, it is such a difficult thing to then come out of. And I wonder if it's a similar thing for you, because what I'm really interested in is, like, what the bulimia actually gave to you, like, when you were performing that behavior. And something that I think I kind of read in your book was, like, it started as something you know, that provided relief and things like that, and then over time it almost just became second nature. And I think for me, I could say I've not purged in terms of, like, self-induced vomiting, but for me, things like restriction, they started as a way to navigate difficult situations, but then because they become so ingrained in life, it almost becomes a habit, a ritual, not even something that you consciously have thought over. And I wonder if that was the same transition for you, in that, like, okay, well, I've initially started to, you know, I make myself sick and I feel relief from that, but, you know, after however long, you get to a point of, like, I actually can't sit with this food in me now, and it's just automatic that I need to go and make myself sick.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a big thing for me. Was beginning of my journey with bulimia, at the start, it was something that I actively chose to do, and that I actively, this was a, this perfect solution that I had, because of the people around me. I was a child, I was 12, I was told when to eat, I sat down at the meal time, so I had no way of controlling my food intake except for this method. And so I very much projected the control and behaviour onto other people, saying that internally I had no choice, I had to do this. And then what I found is, as I got older and as I continued to be bulimic, is I then went to boarding school. And whilst my parents went there, I then had to house parents and kind of school staff that were then not controlling my food intake, but I then again projected the behaviour of what I was doing onto them. Whereas it obviously wasn't the case at all, it was something had internally told myself this so that I could continue doing this behaviour, because it became second nature and it was all I knew. And as long as at the back of my mind, I knew that this was the only way that I could keep the body that I wanted, keep the confidence and kind of the external personality that I was portraying, then it would be fine. And then when I needed to stop, I really could. And then obviously I went to university, and then I was in a self-hated wall. I had no family around me. I had no kind of teachers or staff that were going to report to my parents or care, like, I was a full adult, independent. And then I said, stop. And I think for me, that was kind of a big realization factor. But then again, it's amazing what you can, there's something you can tell yourself, because I kind of was, I just moved from Asia to England for the first time. I was fitting into a university environment, making new friends on this new course. So again, kind of internally, the narrative continued to be that, well, good time to stop. Now is not time to kind of change this external persona that everyone likes, that you'll get, like, you're a popular kid, you're, like, getting on with everyone in your halls and everyone thinks you're really fun and no one needs to know this kind of thing about you, because it's so easy to maintain, because I've kept this secret for now 10 years or so. And that just continued as I got older and as I kind of continued in different circumstances in my life. I feel like, oh, at this friend's house, I won't do it, and then I find a way, or at this event, I won't do it, and then, of course, I always found a way. And it was just something that kind of, I don't think I was fully honest with myself for a long time. And even though I was very aware of what I was doing, the narrative that I told myself was that you have to continue this, otherwise this, the situation that you're in that you think is happy will change. When, like, obviously, to the external world, I was very happy, but internally, I was in turmoil. I just didn't have to kind of, the disconnect between those two was so large.
I honestly, and this is a piece of the book that I found so fascinating as well, was when you were talking about this kind of external facade, I guess, that you were putting on to the wider world. Because I, again, experienced something so similar in that I thought very logically, like if I look a certain way and can perform a certain way in the gym, that's how I'll get friends. Like I never felt like I fit in. So if I do these things, that will make me fit in. And then I actually did start getting, making more friends and things like that. But it was because I was now part of something. I was in the powerlifting society at uni. So I was now part of something that meant you made friends. Whereas before that, my hobbies were art and drawing and very isolated things. So looking back, it had nothing to do with the fact that I was skinnier and I was, going to the gym or whatever. It was all because I was putting myself out there. But equally, at the same time, I was putting myself out there, but trying to be somebody that I actually wasn't, but putting on a show for people. And I wonder if you experienced something similar in terms of, it sounds there very much like you were saying, I put on this like happy, really fun person, but inside it was kind of that inner turmoil, and how bulimia played a role in like that. Did that kind of give you happiness or some sort of emotion that you were lacking from other areas?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because for me, and again, it wasn't something I probably realized until about 2 years ago, but I was at home with my parents. We were watching like videos of when we were children. And in these videos, you could see I was probably about 3 or 4 years old, and my brother, he's a couple years older. And in these videos, there's just the two of us. And he is an extrovert 100%. And he is so loud, and he's vocal, and he's doing all of these things. You can just see me as a child next to him, so quiet, very introverted, internalizing already at that age everything that I'm kind of thinking, that I'm feeling, not for whatever reason to compete or whatever, projecting kind of this now persona. And I think it started then, but it wasn't something that I connected until as much later that actually the way that I cope with social situations, although I can, like, I'm very good at playing the game in a corporate environment, and when I need to, I can become. But it's not something that comes naturally, and it's not something that I necessarily recharge off of like most people. So take away the bulimia completely. I think it was always just the way that I coped with situations was just the kind of internal thing. But I obviously, for whatever reason, felt external pressure and need to 100% project this confident, bubbly, sporty, want to be social, let's go to the party, let's drink, let's do all of this personality. Because that's how I felt that I'd be accepted, even though it wasn't not natural to me, which is where the bulimia came in and helped me cope with this when I went to a new school, when I went to these events, when I hung out with these people. Instead of kind of being okay with how I really felt and the uncomfortableness, I suppressed that and I coped with by using this mechanism where it gave me kind of continuous relief throughout the day because everything, the anxiety and the kind of pressure that I felt. I put into this binge and then purge, and then for the next couple of hours, it was off my mind, and I could become this person until the next vicious cycle. And that was just something that just continued throughout my whole life. Which is, you look back and you just think, how did that behavior ever become associated with like a normal way of dealing with a slightly uncomfortable emotion that I felt when I was 12? And again, it's a catalyst of a whole host of things. But it's just bizarre.
Yeah, and it's, I'm just kind of a bit shocked, and I guess maybe, I mean, I read the book and I felt like I resonated so much with your story anyway, but it is so interesting how, despite different patterns of behavior, we both like, I'm very similar, I'm an only child and I'm very happy to just kind of chill on my own and stuff. But I felt, that pressure from society in terms of, you've got to be cool, you've got to be popular, you've got to hang out with people. And the way to do that is to be skinny, be attractive and be sporty. So it's very interesting that we had sort of that similar mindset. And one thing I wanted to talk about as well, you kind of mentioned it there, was kind of the secretiveness of the bulimia that you enjoyed, and almost feeling like you had sort of something that nobody else had. So can you talk a bit more about that and why you liked almost the secretive behavior of it?
Yeah, so I think part of the underlying desires, I guess, that kind of started my bulimia was this kind of idea of control. And I was very child that's kind of in a very privileged position where there's food on the table every night and there's a full fridge. And the only control that I had was around my food intake, because obviously I went to school and I had this kind of prescribed life that, although I felt independent, I was still a child and kind of had to do these things. So food became the only method that I had to control. And then the secretive behaviour became kind of like a rebellious and like a defiant behaviour that I then had against my parents. Again, because I was trying to grow up faster than I needed to, and all of these things that I felt uncomfortable that they would never understand. And I think for so long I convinced myself, again, this self-narrative, that they would never understand, so it had to be a secret because they would make me stop. But I never gave them, I never spoke to them, I never told them what I was going through or kind of the thoughts that I was feeling that led to me then doing this action. I never really gave them a chance. And although obviously, like you'll see in the book or read in the book, that when I lost a lot of weight very quickly, it was very apparent that I had an issue, and then it was all about fixing this issue and what's wrong with you. And again, it was a kind of negative narrative that I had on it, that I then was not in any position to accept what was going on, what I was doing, that I didn't want to change it, that I then, my only solution was to keep it a secret, which I then took again. I didn't tell friends, I didn't tell teachers, I didn't tell anyone, because no one would understand. And if, in a way, I didn't want to make other people feel uncomfortable by me sharing this story. So I was trying to protect other people and to internalize, again, my suffering, which I don't know how, so young, I need to do that. I felt like that's something I needed to do. But it's just something that then, neither one of them have to do. Consciously, when I'm feeling uncomfortable, when I'm feeling upset, it's kind of vocalize it, because it's not the natural thing that I want to do. I'm very independent. I kind of, this thing that I went through for so long gave me like a huge understanding of myself, and recovery has also opened up. Like, I've done so much work on myself, but it's not that I don't need any. It would be my first kind of, my first reaction to a situation will be to internalize like I used to, but I know that's not what I think to do. And I know that if I keep doing that, it's a dangerous path.
Yeah. I'm laughing at how similar we are, because my therapist literally says to me, I'm so self-aware, it's to my own detriment sometimes, because I feel like I can just manage things on my own. But equally, if someone doesn't get what's going on, I'm just like, well, how can you not understand? Like, it's obvious, like we've been here before. But something I was wanted to pick up on as well, I think like internalizing it so that you don't kind of cause that upset to other people, kind of it shows the kind of caring nature that you have and not wanting to cause that distress to people. But I think in the book you also spoke about how you wanted to keep it a secret because you had this goal in mind, and if you told anybody, then they would stop you from kind of reaching that goal. But one thing I thought, I don't know, this was like a question I wanted to ask you whilst I was reading, was there ever a goal in mind, or was it kind of like just keep on going endlessly, or like, you know, once you reach one goal, you've kind of forgotten about that one because you're already on to the next one?
Yeah, completely. And I think it was at the beginning, it was to achieve a certain body weight, which obviously when I got to body weight, it was then to the goalpost continuously changed. And that idea of perfect, or the solution that I had, which is why I kind of named the book what I did, which is accept that you're imperfect. Your quest is not to perfect yourself, but that's your imperfect self. And I think it just summed it up, and no one's. And if I could have shouted at this 12-year-old child, you will never feel that kind of complete satisfaction. It's all about acceptance and what you have and what you're grateful for and the things that you can do. And it's just something that everyone needs to do. And it's very hard, especially with social media now. And it's very hard. But like, even I see things on social media, and I question myself worth, and I compare. Think of what's behind the photo, like what was their childhood, what's their story, and like the more you kind of humanize an image or a situation, the more you kind of uncover that everyone has them, like no matter what you look like, everyone has their good days, their bad days, everyone feels this kind of negativity towards themselves at times, and the more that you can manage it and accept it and not sit with it. Whereas I just, that was the only thing I focused on when I was a child, and it was, it consumed my entire day. And it was the only thing I cared about. It was the only thing that I avoided everything else in my life for whatever reason. This became my sole focus, and then I became so fixated and obsessed with this, kind of changing my body, because that would solve every other problem that I had around me. And I associated the two, which is a very common thing, I think, in society, to associate your self-worth with how you look, unfortunately. Mm. But it's, I don't have the solution for it, but the more you're aware of it and the more you accept kind of you for who you are, you can do the kind of the healthier relationship you will then have with yourself.
Yeah. It's really interesting, actually. It's something I've been really reflecting on recently in terms of looking at my most recent relapse and kind of the impact that that's had. And you kind of mentioned it there, in that you have this like idea in your head of like, you know, I want to look X, or I want to be X person, or I want to have X characteristic, and in order to do that I need to engage in these behaviors and I'll get there. And you know, it's very logical, and actually if you think about it, it makes no freaking sense in the slightest. But you know, once you're on board, the eating disorder is very very convincing, so you don't question it. And actually, and I think you've like really described it there with what you've said, is that everything you were trying to become, it just kind of took you away from even more. Like, yes, it may have impacted your body in the way that you wanted, but actually through the behaviors and the way that it affects your brain, you end up hating your body more than you ever did. And you know, you're trying to be more sociable and outgoing and get more friends and this, that and the other, but actually, you know, you're dying on the inside, and you're so preoccupied by like, when am I next going to purge, or you know, what's in this meal, like can I get away with not purging, or do I need to purge it, that sort of thing. And it the eating disorder actually takes you away from everything that you're trying to become. So, but then by that point, you're so kind of entrenched in it that you can't see the wood from the trees. And it's just like, well, how do I get out now? And I don't even know, sometimes when you're in the depth of it, do you have the thought of how do I get out? Because it feels like the only option.
Yeah, it's similar to like the similar motivations with my fiance, who has been in recovery and through the rooms, addiction towards like drugs and alcohol. And we discussed when we first spoke of our stories and the amount of similarities that there were, because it's a behavior and a means of control that you use to focus and fixate on that kind of avoids what you're really trying to deal with. As humans, people go to the pub on a Friday night and have a little bit of avoidance. People will have an eating disorder for 20 years, and there's so many extremities of life that the scales that you can do things, but your behaviors are not actually as they seem, and there's obviously other factors that are causing this, because it's not a normal behavior, normal in kind of quotas, because what's normal? I don't know. But yeah, and it's, and once you are, it's like a breakup, once you're so deep in it, you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, because it becomes your reality, it becomes your norm. The self-narrative that I told myself for however many years of, you can't eat pasta, you can't eat this, because you're, whatever I told myself, it was just completely made up. There's no scientific reliance or fact that I was a child and I never externally said any of these things, so no one could tell me that I was being silly or this wasn't true. And kind of, it was just a combination of this internal thing that fueled my behavior, that convinced me that these were all the right things I was doing, and I was kind of my own worst enemy, because I was the only person I spoke to about it all. But I had no one to tell me otherwise. And yeah, I can't believe now at the age of 30, I look back on my period of life, and I can't believe how much time I spent with my head down the toilet and wasting money on food that I would then immediately purge. And it's sad. But it's also that because of that period and because of what I went through, I'm not in a position for the next person to live a very, very different life. And I don't believe that, had I not gone down that method of binging and purging, I don't believe I would have got away free. And I think there would have been something else in my life that I would have used as a means of control or avoidance. So kind of until you are faced with something that you're dealing with kind of head on, there will always be kind of some trigger or some kind of situation in your life. And I think it's kind of a good way to reframe it all, is that kind of everyone has their shit. But not everyone is courageous enough to deal with it. Not everyone is forced to deal with it like I was or like you were. And actually, I'm really grateful for that because, and I still deal with it every day. And it's kind of, it's a journey. And I'm never going to say I'm fully recovered or I was kind of recovered for 5 years that I thought. And then I relapsed in COVID. And it's completely a journey, but it's a journey that I'm very kind of privileged to be on because I think the more recent years of my life, because I'm now not avoiding emotion and not avoiding through this coping mechanism, everything is a lot more fulfilling. Everything is so real. Everything is kind of a lot more meaningful to me in my life than that's a much kind of better perspective that I'd like to have because you can compare it to what it used to be like.
Yeah. I think I really like the fact, you know, and you said it at the start as well, like it is a journey and, you know, what does recovery look like? I think that can be so different for everybody. And I guess I'm just interested kind of when you had your relapse during COVID, how did that make you feel? Did you think like, oh shit, like I'm back here and like, you know, I'm never going to get away from this? Or was it kind of a, I know what's happening here. I'm going to sort it, or somewhere messy in between.
Probably somewhere messy in between. So I thought, again, self-narrative. I convinced myself because I wasn't physically making myself sick that my eating disorder had just gone, it disappeared. And I think I naively thought that that was what defined my eating disorder, rather than the internal thoughts I had of food, my body image, how I dealt with situations, this still method of control that I had, and then actually those 5 years post initial recovery period, those 5 years were fueled with disordered eating. I just wasn't being clean, so to me it wasn't an issue. And again, I just think I was naive to the process. My recovery journey was kind of cut short because I moved to London and just doing exciting things. From society's perspective, I was fine because I'm a female that cared about how she looked and didn't eat like sweets in the office. Because I was playing lots of sport, which again was an easy way for me to hide this eating disorder because I was training so hard for this World Cup tournament that I wasn't drinking and I wasn't eating the cake and I was training extensively every day. And I lost loads of weight and I looked the best I'd ever looked and everyone was complimenting me. But internally, I was just, this eating disorder was back with a vengeance, but just in a very different form. So in COVID about relapse, I was disappointed, but I don't think I was very surprised. Because again, I think deep down I knew that I still had a lot of issues around food and my body image and how I associated myself well. I just didn't have the time or had the excuse to not deal with it. So I think when shit hit the fan in COVID and it was kind of, I couldn't believe how easily it came back and how quickly what happened with once a week became twice a week, became every day over the space of a couple of days. But it also, it felt different in the sense that I didn't want to do it. Whereas a lot of the time as a child, this behavior that I was choosing to do, it was a choice and I wanted to do it and it was the right thing in my mind to do. Whereas in COVID, it was not what I wanted to do. I just didn't want to stop and like, kind of fully hands up. I need help. I need to get even deeper into this because otherwise every time I have a stressful situation, like please may there never be another pandemic. But if there is a difficult period in my life or a situation that I don't know how to handle, I know that deep down this coping mechanism will always be there for me. So I needed to kind of fully retrain my brain to know that this was not an option anymore because it will never be the solution that I needed to. And obviously, you just go through the motion in difficult periods as face on as you can, because it will just come to you. You can't get away from it. It doesn't get away. It's So they were very different. And again, grateful because it forced me to get even deeper, understand even more, and kind of just reflect on the purpose of my life as one rather than kind of this childhood and then this kind of teenage years, because it just never really stopped.
Yeah. I think, you know, you highlight a really good point there of recovery is really hard, and there's been times in my recovery where I've been like, what are we doing this for? Like, this feels so much worse than what it did when we were just numbing and suppressing and, you know, kind of walking like a zombie day to day through life. But I think it's like you say, it's so important if you do want to have that life of freedom that, I mean, apparently the reviews are pretty good, so you might as well try it. Then you've got to kind of go through the difficulties, because if you're engaging in something as kind of, you know, life-threatening and uncomfortable as, you know, an eating disorder, there's going to be a lot of a difficult emotion there that you are trying to suppress, and that can feel awful to go through. But I think I'm very similar with my most recent relapse. Is like, yeah, it's really shit. You know, probably one of the worst years of my life. But actually, it made me realize that I was just surviving. Like, I was really living a life that was bound by so many rules. But I was coping. It outwardly seemed like I was coping. And like you said about sort of your sporting and stuff, it's a very easy way to, I did it with powerlifting. It wasn't even like at a competitive level, but it was like, I can't eat that because I'm powerlifting, or like, I've got to weight cut before a competition because I'm a powerlifter. And it's like, you're doing uni champs. You really don't need to be doing that, for God's sake. But it's so easy to sort of normalize those behaviors. And I think getting and hitting rock bottom, as hard as it is, can be a great time to be like, okay, like, things really aren't actually as I maybe thought that they were here, and we do need to take some time to refocus so that, you know, the next however many years of your life aren't then bound by this eating disorder, but instead, you know, who knows what the possibility could be. And I think one thing I like to say, and I mean, you said there, like, there's no way that you'd ever want to go back, but what I said to myself when I initially engaged in recovery was like, okay, give this a shot. And worst case scenario, if it's really horrible out there and recovery is just this awful place and like being free in life is terrible and you hate it, just come back. Like, you know how to do it. Like, you know what to do. And, you know, fortunately, like you, I have no temptation to go back whatsoever to that dark place. But it is, you know, it's hard, and all those emotions do need to be processed, which can feel often like, why do I want to do this?
Completely. And I think that's something that as I've gotten older and become kind of more comfortable with who I am and the people that I have surround me, is it's also being honest with yourself. Like, I get up at 5 a.m. every morning and I go to the gym. And for a lot of people, that's extreme, and that's kind of an obscene behavior, and why don't you have it? But I know if I do this extreme behavior in the morning, it will prevent me from taking my life to this other extremity that I have been to way too many times. And then I stopped drinking a year and a half ago. I chose to do that because my relationship was changing, it wasn't serving me the way that it did. And again, for a lot of people, it's a very extreme thing to do. Why can't you just have one beer? And I don't have that personality. And the more that you accept and understand how you work and what works for you, and stop caring about other people. I know that I, for the last year and a half, since I stopped drinking, since I go to the gym most mornings, have had the happiest, most fulfilling, most successful life of my life so far. And to me, that's what's important. And how those behaviours may differ to other people is fine, but I no longer need to justify how I choose to spend my day. And I think that's the biggest thing. And again, it keeps coming back to the thing of acceptance. I know that I have a little bit of an addictive personality, a very addictive personality, because it can go to these things. And I've been to some extremes that no one would understand. Why, actually, I had to write it in a book, because I didn't know who I could tell those stories to that would actually want to listen. Mm. Because some of it is so horrific, and some of it is just so extreme that it can't be real. But it's everything on that. In I did, and so whether you believe it or not, I did it. And now I know how to manage my life in a way that is more acceptable to society externally that I'm just healthy and I look after myself and I care about how I look. But actually, it's keeping everything else mentally for me in line.
Mm-hmm.
And being more important to me.
Yeah, I think that's such a key message in terms of we, particularly on social media, we have this idea of like what recovery looks like and what you should be doing and things like that. And actually, you know, it is so different for everybody. And, you know, I think that's such an important thing of like some people will want to stop drinking, some people will want to have the occasional drink. And I find as I'm getting older now, a lot of people are making big decisions in their life about things. And actually, it's about staying in your lane and working out what's the best for you. And the gym is one thing I really struggled with of being like, oh, you know, like I've had an excessive relationship with exercise. Should I now be exercising? But exercise is so diverse that actually you can, you know, if I find that it brings me to life in a similar way that it sounds like to you, and I absolutely love sport. So I don't want to take that away from myself. And I think if I did say, you know, I cannot exercise, that is almost, it feels as though the eating disorder is coming in a different way because it's setting those like clear cut points on me. Whereas I have now found something that allows me to kind of make friends and engage with other people and feel successful. So I think it's really important when you look at recovery to not have like a clear idea of like, I'll never engage in a bad behavior again. I'll never have a disordered thought again. I'll never do this, that, and the other. It is definitely doing what is right for you, but being able to check back with yourself and say, that felt a bit off. What's going on here?
Yeah, I think like again, it's a journey. I'm still learning most of the time. I know what I need to rest, but one out of 10 times, I'll get it wrong. I'll overtrain and I'll have to check in with myself and be like, look, you should have just rested today. That wasn't a good session. You need to have that time as well for your body to recover and get rid of the mental headspace of, you know, it will make you feel better because sometimes the body doesn't need that. And sometimes, certain meals I have, certain food I eat, the difference for me is not that thought pattern will just completely go away and I then feel guilty or should I eat something healthier. But the difference is the self narrative that I have. Say, no, you enjoyed that, you deserve to eat that. And it sounds so simple, but the more positive, and you had this 3 weeks ago and you woke up the next day and you were fine, so you need to just relax. And it's just constantly checking in with yourself and being a positive person, because for so long I was the opposite. I was negative and I was punishing myself and I was criticizing myself, and there was just no need for it. I don't know why I'm so harsh, because I'm so kind to everyone else. But it's just something that, yeah. And everyone said it before, like, talk to yourself like you would your best friend. And it's just, the more you remind yourself and the more you read the same kind of things of how to be kinder and how to kind of be more mindful when you eat and do all of these little steps, it's the more they become practice. And it's, no one has the answer. But it's, if you do the hard, like, recovery is hard, but if you do the work, it's so worth it.
Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, you know, it's the title of your book, but accept that you're not perfect, because at the end of the day, recovery is not going to be perfect either, and there is no perfect. And I always try to think, you know, if you try to be what your idea of perfect is, cool, but everybody is going to have a different idea of perfect, so you're never going to please anybody, so you're just fighting a losing battle. But Jade, it's been such a pleasure to chat to you, and it's so nice to actually talk to you through your book, because I read your book in 2 days. It was so bloody good. So I highly recommend, and I'll put links for the book and your social media and everything in the show notes so people can contact you. But thank you so much. It's honestly been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.